Il-program li ser tisimaw huwa miġjub lilkom bix-xewqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.
Welcome to University Matters on Campus FM 103.7. I'm Patricia Camilleri, and in this series we shall be hearing from academics about their research and from students and other members of the campus community about the many activities which will be taking place during the coming year. I'm very pleased to have with me today on University Matters on Campus FM, Professor Piotr Romanowski from the Institute of Specialized and Intercultural Communication at the Warsaw University. He is here as a guest of the Department of Translation, Terminology and Interpreting Studies as part of the Erasmus Plus Mobility Agreement between the University of Malta and Warsaw University. Dr. Romanowski is an assistant professor at the Faculty of Applied Linguistics at the Warsaw University, and he was awarded his PhD in Applied Linguistics by the Jagiellonian University in Krakow. He's been involved in teaching of English to students and in-service teachers for almost 20 years. His main area of research involves intercultural communication within the context of English language teaching methodology. He also investigates language acquisition with a specific interest in bilingualism and multilingualism. He is a member of such prominent associations as the IATEFL, Polish Association of Modern Languages, Global Awareness Society International, the Arab-US Association for Communication Educators, the Global Academic Network, and is a speaker at their annual conferences. During his visit, he will be conducting a series of seminars on bilingualism and multilingualism with Professor Claire Vassallo, who has accompanied him today. She is responsible for the history and theory of translation studies within the department, and I hope we'll have a chance to say a little bit about that. And in fact, Professor Romanowski has just published a book on bilingualism, for which Professor Vassallo has, with others, contributed a chapter. Welcome to you both. When one mentions linguistics to a general audience, even friends and family, my experience is that their eyes tend to glaze over. However, when they begin to look into this fascinating and intriguing world of linguistics, they really realize, as I did years ago, really with an amateur interest, that it opens so many doors to understanding not only ourselves, but our world. How would you describe this wonderful world, and why does it fire you up?
Okay, first of all, for me, linguistics is applied linguistics. I actually specialize in the practical side of linguistics. I have always been interested in helping people to learn languages, helping them understand what lies behind learning languages. That is why I've been teaching language teaching methodology for so long. I have recently switched to bilingualism and multilingualism because these are the issues, these are the burning issues of the present moment. Also, for some time, I've been researching intercultural communication because the world is changing so fast. So this is what actually linguistics or applied linguistics is to me, although I do respect Noam Chomsky for what he said, for his distinction into competence and performance in the 1960s. And I should say that I do follow his way of thinking to some extent as well.
Yes, looking back at the history of it, I mean, obviously linguistics has been, or language has been, an area of study for thousands of years, really. But in Europe, really the 1920s, Saussure, and then, as you mentioned, Noam Chomsky, and developing theories over these last years, there's been such a lot of discussion in linguistic circles about what is important today, what we have to look at. I think that the history of it has been rapid.
Well, for me, it means, for example, another interest, sociolinguistics, which is quite a new discipline, right? which looks at the links between society and language, how language affects society and how society affects the language. It's quite a new discipline. I mean, research has been going on for, let's say, 40 years now, and the father of sociolinguistics is Labov, although there are, of course, other followers. Another issue that I would like to mention are the ties with culture. This is what we should be looking at nowadays, okay? How culture affects the way we speak, the way we use the language.
Absolutely. I hope we'll go a little bit deeper into that if we've got some time. Perhaps I can pass to you, Professor Vassallo, just a mention about your department and, in fact, how it, again, has evolved because of new attitudes to, in your case, translation studies.
Yes. In the past, I mean, up until the 60s, 70s, maybe even early 80s, translation was seen as a strictly linguistic discipline because you are dealing with language and language correspondence and the transfer of meaning from one language system to another. Post-1980s, the semiotic turn and the cultural turn created a shift, and the idea of translation was to look at it not simply as words into other words, but how words create worlds, cultural worlds, and it is the interpretation of one cultural world into another in terms of the response of the different readers, how to create the equivalent response of the original reader in the reader of the translated text. So people like Susan Bassinet from the University of Warwick, who sort of created this new discipline called translation studies, people like Lawrence Venuti, Andrea Lefebvre, Umberto Eco, who wrote three very important books on translation theory and practice, because he's that sort of man, it's always theory and practice, really brought the focus into culture. But it's always culture and language. So the relationship, of course, with linguistics, I mean, it is ultimately, we're dealing with language, meaning, and all of these wonderful and big questions. Here we started the department just over 10 years ago, and we're very much in the tradition of the new translation studies.
I think that's important to note that here we're really looking at the new things that are going on in every single department in the university. And it's for this reason, of course, that you bring over people like Professor Romanovsky who can offer something new, something different, so the expertise of somebody who has written on the subject. And I presume that Malta interests you in particular because of the idea of bilingualism here?
Multilingualism, or
multilingualism,
right.
Yes.
Because you use what? English, Italian, plus Maltese, plus some, you teach other foreign languages. It's such a small island and such a multitude of languages and cultures.
Yes,
right, if you look at the history, I mean, I've read something about it, so that is why I'm so interested in mm-hmm. it. It's my third visit already.
And what have you found? I mean, have you been able to glean some new knowledge out of our situation, or what have you found here?
Actually, I'm interested in, let's say, the language policy, and also which languages are used and when, okay, because you definitely use Maltese at home. Also in informal situations, probably, but I'm not sure about, let's say, formal situations. I mean, I've been on this campus for 2 days now. I could hear people speaking Maltese, but also people switching automatically to English, and then some other people speaking Italian just around the corner. So, I mean, that is something that is really interesting to me.
Yes, well, it's certainly a good place to study multilingualism. Yeah.
One of the contacts Professor Aronofsky is making is with Professor Lydia Schreha, who is expert in bilingualism, especially on the, obviously, situation, multilingualism, bilingualism in Malta. She was also the convener of the conference on bilingualism last year, a large conference which Piotr followed. And she trained in Canada in the 80s when it was, you know, sociolinguistics was really coming into its own. So again, there, when Professor Schreha came to Malta, it was right at the beginning of the sociolinguistic turn. And she was one of my first lecturers in the subject, left a strong mark. And I'm looking forward to introducing Professor Romanovsky and Professor Schreha. In fact, should be fruitful.
Absolutely. And Erasmus Plus, just to talk about the nitty-gritty of it, how does it work? Who is it for?
Well, the contacts one makes academically are extremely useful and fruitful. I first met a Polish colleague, Professor Władek Witalitz, back in about 2005. This led to a conference in 2009 in Krosno, close to Krakow, where I met Professor Arnowski. So that started another link. We've kept in touch, we've published, and now Professor Arnowski is here with the benefit of bringing his knowledge, his way of teaching, his experience to our students. Erasmus structures take a lot of paperwork and time and planning, finance. They don't just happen. But they are so well worth the effort on a personal level, on an academic level, and on bringing to our students speakers on, you know, different angles on their subject. And sometimes the students themselves going off and getting their own experiences, but bringing people here. And then I'll be going over to Warsaw next year to teach Professor Ivanovsky's students. So it's, you know, this is what European collaboration, this is what European universities are about. And it's a strength.
That's wonderful, yes, in all areas. Going back to your seminar, what are you actually going to be talking to the students about?
Well, today I'll be talking about the intercultural approach in languages, mainly speaking.
So give us a bit of a summary of what you're going to be telling the students soon.
Well, which is about, you know, how to become a better speaker, for example, or a better learner in the multicultural world. All right, how to understand other people better, because normally what we do is sometimes we are not aware of what our culture is about. And in order to understand other cultures and other peoples, first of all, we need to realize what we are about. And then secondly, we should observe. The mistake that people make very, very often is that they, for example, are very judgmental at the very beginning. Oh, he's new or she's new. I'm not going to talk to him. Oh, look at him. I mean, he's so strange. And so on and so forth. So this is what I would like to sort of emphasize to the Maltese students, okay, that in order to become better communicators, in order to faster learn languages, we need to be aware of the multiplicity of cultures, backgrounds, peoples, and so on and so forth, right? So that's just one point of the many.
Tolerance and openness,
yes,
to,
precisely,
to the new and the different.
Yes.
Not to be afraid,
not to
but
be afraid,
to be open.
And through being open, does that give one easier access to competence in a language if you are actually wanting to learn the language of that other person?
Yeah, of course. I mean, what we've been striving to achieve is the main goal of language teaching nowadays is achieving the so-called intercultural communicative competence. I mean, linguistic competence as such, or grammatical competence, I mean, which was mentioned back in the 1960s by Chomsky, is not enough. Actually, it's got its roots in what de Saussure said in the 1920s, so it's almost 100 years old. Nowadays, what we should be sort of looking at is intercultural, developing intercultural communicative competence in our learners, in speakers.
That sort of two-way approach is interesting because we often talk about competence in language being very much to do with your own identity. We talk about Maltese being very much a signal, a sign of our identity. So how do you sort of match those two approaches?
Well, I always tell the students that we have to sort of switch from the so-called monocultural identity into multicultural identity, that we, as I said, I mean, should be open and free to observe, on the basis of which we will be able to better know something that is hidden, something that is unknown to us, at least at the moment when we are engaged in a communicative exchange.
In actual fact, when you do learn a language, and I learned two languages as an adult, after I learned obviously English, which is my mother tongue, and I've said this before on this program in other contexts, it was a very frightening experience when I realized that learning that language was going to mean that I was going to have to take on the cultural baggage of the other. I found that quite frightening. It was exciting. In the end, I embraced it, but it's actually quite a frightening experience. So I think that teaching students how that happens and what language really is all about is terribly, terribly important. I mean, I realize that now. In later years, I realize that. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we need to make them aware of the fact that they are not just learning the language, that they are just learning additional things, such as culture. It's impossible to talk about the language without mentioning its culture nowadays, okay? So when you teach your students English, you have to remember that there are some cultural aspects that need to be mentioned at the same time. Although with English, I mean, English is not just, you know, one language that belongs to one community or one nation anymore. I mean, it's an international language. It's a lingua franca nowadays. So this case might be a bit different.
In fact, when we spoke to Professor Crystal, this came out very much, didn't it,
yes,
Claire?
Yes, yes. This is lingua franca, and everybody taking on this language, in a way making it their own, adopting it into their own culture, their own geography even, because you know, one of the, or perhaps two central areas of culture and language, fundamentally interesting, are geography and cooking, cuisine. Because, you know, if you go to Norway, you have fjords. Fjords are not something you find anywhere else. So you're not going to find a word to mean the same. So you end up taking on the words from other languages. Same with food. Lasagna is lasagna. You can't really describe it. You lose it in the description. So this opening to the culture, the actual names of things, like pastizzi. Why call them cheesecakes? They're pastizzi. And it's a way of a sort of multilingual, multicultural layer within other languages. You know, lasagna is an Italian word, but if you're speaking English, Polish, Maltese, we'll still use that Italian word. And it's a way of moving from the purest approach of monolingualism. It seems that the day of monolingualism and monoculturalism is past. And we have this movement of an intercultural communication is also understanding what your listener knows and using words that might be easier for the listener to understand. And therefore, for instance, choosing your English words accordingly, using the Italian root, the Latin root or the Germanic root, and just opening up the language to all its possibilities. I think the notion of multilingualism, especially in Europe, especially if you go to somewhere like Brussels, is on the way out. What you have is a natural mixture. We talk about code switching between two languages, but you can really talk about code switching between a multitude of languages. Interesting, confusing, the confusio linguarium all over again,
But I can see a tug of war going on here. I mean, lately in France, I won't even mention the local context, but in France, they wanted to change some spellings recently, and it got onto the world news because people were objecting. So you've got this tussle between the approach, which you've just mentioned, Claire, and the formalist kind of approach from the academy in the various countries. So I'm not quite sure how we're going to marry those two poles. How are we going to do that, Professor Aronofsky?
Well, it's, I think it's quite difficult. I mean, at least, at this point, it might be quite difficult to answer that question because, you know, different countries have different policies. The French have always been known for, sort of purifying their language, getting rid of all Anglicisms. But, for example, in my country, I mean, there are some people who are in favor of using English words, and they are used on a daily basis, although there are also people who think that perhaps it's better to stick, you know, to our native language and rather get rid of all those foreign words, which might be to some extent confusing.
And also what we're seeing very much now with the new technologies is that before there was that layer of the written language and the spoken language, and they were two distinct layers, and you wrote in a certain way, but the same person would speak, obviously, in a different way. Now, I suspect that the layers have increased enormously in these last years with technology. You write in one way on the SMS, you write in one way in an email, write in one way in a letter, if anyone writes letters anymore. I mean, there are various layers. it's going to be a problem for linguists such as yourself to be able to actually see where those barriers and where those margins are.
To some extent, it might be a problem, of course, but because we are in the digital era now, nowadays, we use the media. But I think that for those who deal with linguistics, it's just a matter of switching from one layer to another. It might be more difficult for students. You need to get used to it to some extent, but I don't think it is troublesome.
And in the novel, it's the same thing. Writing was supposed to be monolingual. For a long time, novels would only be written in one language, which is never strictly true, but that was the tendency. That is changing. I mean, for instance, War and Peace starts with a whole chapter in French, although it's written in Russian. So it's not exactly a totally new thing, because Russian aristocracy spoke French. And yeah, for the novel to be true, it reflected that. But also in local writing, I think of Alex Velagera's strip Regiosaru Velenusi, which is a chapter I wrote about for Professor Romanovsky's book, where just as here we speak more than one language, our bilingualism is something we live with constantly, it is now being reflected in our novels. Our novels are not monolingual anymore. Some characters speak English, some Maltese, some switch within the conversation. There's a whole chapter on emails, just an exchange of emails. That's all in English, because we tend to write in English and speak in Maltese. So, yeah, this multilingual approach in speech that you mentioned is also reflected increasingly in writing.
I come from the UK, where language acquisition was never exactly a great priority. Do you think that, I'm going to be provocative here, do you think that actually learning other languages apart from English is going to be the trend? I'm not saying is it important, because obviously, as we've been discussing, yes, it is important in many, many ways. But is it going to be the trend?
Yes, I guess so. It has been the trend for many years. Of course, it depends on where you are. In such places like Poland or even Germany, or let's say the Scandinavian countries, I mean, learning languages is a very important thing. I would like to say that, in my opinion, after English, I mean, the two languages that we should be sort of considering seriously are Spanish and Chinese, Mandarin Chinese. And these are the languages that people are actually learning nowadays. There are a lot of instances, for example, in Poland, where people have learned English, and since there are not many teachers of Chinese who are Polish, they need to use people who teach them Chinese through English. So you have to meet the condition of knowing English first in order to learn another language. Of course. I mean, in case of Spanish, it's not that way. But these two languages are on the rise nowadays.
In the US, of course, Hispanic voters are very important, as we are learning on the television now. And there is a great drive, I think, to try and understand Hispanics better by actually gaining access to the language.
Well, I think it's true. I mean, for example, if you go to such places as California or if you go to Florida, I mean, it's impossible to sort of get by without knowing the basics, the rudiments of Spanish, all right, where you can see, let's say, notices, where you can see billboards written in Spanish, okay, where you can hear people speaking Spanish. There are places where, for example, English is not used because the community is so big.
I love your idea, Clara, going back to the food bit, because cuisine has become really the in thing. I mean, you can't turn on a TV program without food coming into it somewhere. And I think perhaps that is a way of really introducing people to.
Let's go back to the UK, very monolingual UK, yes? If you eat out in the UK, you've probably learned a lot of Thai words, Vietnamese words, Chinese words, Italian, French. In fact, you've probably learned the words of the cuisines of about 7 or 8 different countries. That's for monolingual Britain. That thinks it's monolingual, but it actually isn't.
Well, when I left it in the 70s, it was rather.
Yes,
it wasn't a lot of Thai restaurants.
Roast and spuds on Sundays.
Yes, it's changed.
Yeah, except Sundays. I think Sundays and breakfast.
Probably they remain the same as well. In the last couple of minutes that we have at our disposal, perhaps you could talk about your new book.
Okay, well, one of the books that I would like to promote is devoted to bilingualism. Actually, there are two projects going on devoted to bilingualism. And the one that I would like to talk about is entitled The Many Faces of Bilingualism, okay, to which Professor Vassallo contributed. Well, I would like to say that we have managed to have over 30 contributions, and the initial idea was to produce one book, and in the end we decided to have two because the contributions were so interesting. I mean, we have contributors from such places as New Zealand, as Australia, the United States, and of course Singapore, China, plus many European countries. What is interesting about the book is that it allows the reader to look at what is going on in all these countries from the point of view of bilingualism. We are going to look at bilingual education in general, also bilingualism and how it affects language teaching, also different methodologies applied. One of them being the most, let's say, important one is content language integrated learning. Also, there are some contributions devoted to early bilingualism, so how, let's say, small children acquire two or three languages. So this is roughly speaking, I mean, this interesting content that the reader will soon be able to have an insight into.
And Claire, your particular chapter, what was it about?
It's about bilingualism in Alex Bellagera's novel, History of Reggio Sarravellanusi, which I just mentioned briefly, and the particular issues in translation, the problem of translating a bilingual text that's written in Maltese and English. Now, if you translate it into a third language, you can keep the difference between the two languages. Say, if you're translating into Italian, you can keep the English and translate the Maltese into Italian and keep that sense of two languages working. But what happens when you translate that into English? And so one of the languages seems to disappear. How do you keep traces of that bilingual way of not just speaking, but thinking and being? That comes through that book, because the issue of two languages is more than a surface issue. It is very much the theme of the novel itself, the different social problems, living in Malta and living in Brussels. So it's actually a central theme to the book. So if you translate it into English, which is what we'd like to do, how does one deal with these problems?
Well, it sounds really interesting. I look forward to reading it. I hope it just hasn't been translated into Polish and left there.
No, not yet.
Jolly good, jolly good. Well, our time has come to an end. I would like to thank Professor Claire Vassallo and Professor Piotr Romanowski for coming to talk to us today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Patricia.
You've been listening to University Matters on Campus FM. Do join me again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.
Il-program li għadkom kem smajtu kien miġjub lilkom bix-xewqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.